First Baptist Church of Redmond, January 12th, 2020. Mark chapter 5. Two faith stories.
Will you all please rise? This morning I'll be reading from Mark, verse 36. But Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer. Only believe." Thank you. You may be seated.
Thank you very much. I saw that image, and this really is the story of two touches. You'll be seeing two touches involving Jesus, but I went ahead and thought it would be two faith stories because that's really what we're looking at. Tell me, what are some things that, I don't know, if we get responses to this, you know, don't give somebody a bad time later about what you might say, but what are things that might make you afraid?
Bugs.
What else? Go ahead. Heights. Now, do you worry as you go throughout the day that you're going to find some gym, some killer bug that might get you? I wouldn't tell you. I won't tell on him for this thing. So do you think that someday, do you think that today as you're going around, suddenly you're going to find yourself like on a really high place that you don't expect and maybe you might fall? That might be a concern. I sometimes have vertigo, and not very often, but if I'm up someplace and it strikes, I just have to stop and shut my eyes. And God is merciful. I don't have it bad. In a moment or two, my mind will clear. Now, I didn't really experience that much. About two times in my past, it's really grabbed me. And one of them, my wife was with me. We were climbing around in Yosemite Falls in California. And I just had to stop for a minute because I was sure that gravity had me in its special attention and I was going to fall. But I did not. God is merciful. I lived through that. So often people say that when you have gone to bed, those first few minutes before you fall asleep, that that is when worry can creep into your mind the hardest. Sometimes people have a vision of the next day, what might happen, what kind of things could go wrong, how things they're planning for, hoping for, could be dashed, could be destroyed. Researcher Lucas Lafreniere, who's a PhD, said, "This is what breaks my heart about worry. It makes you miserable in the present moment to try and prevent misery in the future. For chronic worriers, this process leads them to be continually distressed all their lives in order to avoid later events that never happen." That's the stress of his research. Worry sucks the joy out of the here and now. In a study on worry, people were asked to record their worries and how that interfered with their lives. Each night at 10 o'clock, they would sit down, they would write down things they were worried about. 20 days afterwards, they went back and noted if any of their worries became true. So I'll tell you the answer, but I'll ask you first, what percent do you think of things we worry about never happen? Take a guess. I'll tell you the answer. Zero? Okay. No? Very good. Well, very good. Any other guesses? What percent of things that you worry about never happen? 80%? Survey said 91% of the things we are concerning ourselves about never, never, ever take place. As we pick up our gospel story from the book of Mark, we're going to start at verse 21. We're going to backtrack a little bit. We're going to address two very famous stories of anxiety, concern, but they were real concerns. These people were worrying about situations that are very common to us. And there are things that perhaps can stop us even now. If you look at Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all three of these synoptic, and they're called synoptic gospels because they tend to talk about very similar events. John is a little bit different in his construction of his epistle under God's direction. The three synoptic gospels contain these stories together. We're going to have two things that happen in one big morning for Jesus. And all the Gospels contain this, and they contain this link to this. What these do is these present Jesus' power over humanly hopeless cases. They deal with disease and death. Even people who don't necessarily think about God very much in their day, or maybe never at all. If they find themselves in the hospital, or they find themselves walking home from the doctor's office as you've heard some tragic news, even then people would begin to reflect about their future and about their maker. These stories also reflect on Jesus' day, what it was like. The Bible has very little recorded for us about Jesus' life. I mean, I like biographies sometimes. One of my favorite biographies is on Churchill, and big books, massive. Things like that I tend to get on my phone now because there's enough room on the bookshelf, so little that I have no room for them. This passage shows us the pressure under which Jesus must often have worked, served, ministered. He moved among people. Let them know God loved him. His power and the concern that God has for we humans was on display as he interacted with people walking among them. As Jesus was returning, remember, Mark is very linear in its presentation of Jesus' life. Well, one event to the next event that God chose him to discuss. He had crossed the Sea of Galilee. There was that terrible storm. When he landed, he met the group of individuals that were possessed by demons. He cast the demons out. At least one of them turned to him and changed his life. And now Jesus is on his way back to his original location. He comes across the trip. And when he lands, he had a different reception than the departure he had over in the region of Gadara. Because you remember, when he caused the demons to leave and they chose to go into the other unclean things, the pigs, the people asked him to leave. Please leave us. Why? They didn't want Jesus to deal with their lives. They didn't want Jesus to control or change their lives. They were very happy with it was right now. A lot of people do that today. I hear about Jesus. I don't have time for him right now. But now when he returned, a large group met, and Luke adds the words welcome. They were looking forward to him. They welcomed him. They wanted to see him. They wanted him to be with them. While he arrived, there was a couple individuals in the group that we're going to mention. The first one is Jairus. He was the president of the board of elders of the local, Jewish synagogue met him. Remember, Jesus would on occasion go and speak at the synagogue. Some people liked him, sometimes they didn't. But the leader of this group liked Jesus, but he had a particular reason to come and see him. Jairus is the Greek form of the Hebrew name Jair. That was probably his given name, meaning he will give light. He showed great respect for Jesus. And you remember when Jesus did this miracle in the previous section about casting the demons out, when the demon-possessed leader came, I think it was like the incident when Jesus was arrested in the garden. Are you Jesus of God? Yes. And the soldiers and then fell down. Deferential to God, I think, more close to them do that. When the demon-possessed man came to see Jesus, I think the president of the synagogue, the man automatically went down prostrate before him as he was speaking. Here, Jairus also gets down and kneels, but I don't think that's because of something Jesus or God did. This was a sign of respect. We don't really do that here. Sometimes if we see this, it's because we're reading a book or looking at something historical about someone who comes to meet a king or a sultan, and they get on their hands and knees to show respect. This is what I believe was the motivation for him to get on his hands and knees. You can see he had a burden. And his burden was for his child. He implored him earnestly, Jairus did, as he spoke to Jesus. And this is the idea of very, very pleading. You would plead for your life this way. But he is not pleading for his life. He is pleading for the life of his child. 542 tells us she's 12 years old. And this little girl might say, Dad, don't call me that. She's my little daughter. It was a cute diminutive name, just got my little sweetie, or here's my honey. That's the idea of the phraseology he's using. Please, my young little child is very, very sick. At the point of death is a nice euphemism for what is smoother euphemism than translation directly, which would have said she has reached her final state. In other words, he is saying there's no hope for her. Whatever her illness was had gone to completion, and the physicians have said there's nothing more we can do. She is going to be here until she dies. There is no hope for recovery. What does he say? Please come. This man was afraid because all the news he had heard, because of his position, he would have had the ability to get the best. He would have had the ability to know people. He could have asked questions. So I'm sure the best physicians had come to him. The best advice had been given to him. The best treatments had been applied. But he had a strong desire for Jesus to come. Jairus would have known Jesus personally, and because he was the leader of the synagogue, and this is the side of Galilee where Jesus grew up, lived, he very likely had met Jesus personally, and we're guessing that he had a high opinion of him when Jesus would come to the synagogue and teach, and so he felt comfortable coming to Jesus individually, personally. And notice he believed that Jesus could heal her. And in his mind, Jesus' personal presence would make the difference. People have come, they've looked, they've examined. Sometimes in your New Testament, in the Gospels, you will see that if someone's going to know or do something for someone, they're pictured as hovering over them, looking down at them, to study, to examine, to connect with them. And then face to face, it'd be easy to have that person, if you're the one laying there sick, to see that person is looking at you, to notice that they care. Jairus believed Jesus could make a difference in this girl's life. And he thought that since everyone else wanted to have personal contact, you can imagine talking to a doctor on the phone or nurse practitioner over the phone, describe your problem. I think you should come in. Why? Because they need to see you to diagnose you. So he thought Jesus was like everybody else. Jesus took off and went with the man. Notice we don't really have Jesus saying anything. His actions were the answers that were sought. Jesus, please come. So Jesus came. Sensing they would see another of Jesus' great miracles, the crowd that was so happy to see him and welcomed him went with them. This person being the leader of the local synagogue, people would have known who he was and known where he lived. They thought, I'll go over. We'll go over and look and see. And very possibly more people gathered together, followed along, joining the crowd. What's happening? Must be something. Oh, Jesus has been invited by Jairus to come look at his daughter. Jesus moved among the people, and he was very well liked because he would listen to people. He would talk to people. He could solve problems. He would talk about things that were spiritually important and personally important. As he was traveling, there was a woman in the crowd. Won't get into the details. You can look this up if you want to, or if you ask enough people, you'll probably find someone who's had this experience themselves. There was a woman who had been hemorrhaging blood for 12 consecutive years. So it's interesting to me, how long has this woman had this problem? 12 years. How old is this little girl? 12 years. So one was born, one began having the issue at the same time. Interesting that that timing worked out that way. In this great crowd, there was a woman who had this unfortunate issue that still happens today. But it wasn't happening today, it was happening then. And there seems to have been no one who could have helped her. Her faith was so great that she believed that if she just touched Jesus' clothes, didn't have to touch his body, shake hands, or even talk to him, if she just touched his clothes, she could be healed of some problem that nothing at her time, no one at her time could make a difference with. Her issue, number one, made her ceremonially unclean. If you look at, think of the temple had a section called the court of women, because women were able to enter into the outside areas of the temple. But because she had been ceremonially unclean, Old Testament comments looking at the law, she would not have been allowed to go into the temple to worship or make a sacrifice for all this time, 12 years. It broke her relationships with almost every other living person that she knew. In our Jewish communities, if you had certain diseases or certain things that you had done in the last week, you might be seen as unclean. People could have you over to their house. So for 12 years, and I'm guessing that because this is a Jewish community, we're looking at most of her friends were Jewish, she could not have gone to their house for 12 years. By the way, she makes her house unclean, so people couldn't come to see her for 12 years. So for 12 years, she never had had the social interaction of someone come to see her or her being able to go and see them. Imagine the social outcast that she would have felt. It made her unwelcome, which is in other people's houses. It made her continuously seek healing. I'll just say something about myself. With my one of the aspects of my diabetes that I have is I have diabetic thirst. I don't have a lot of the other characteristics that people are concerned about, but I'm thirsty all the time. And so I'll see ads or I'll see discussions. I'll look things up. What can I do to make that go away? Dry mouth, all that kind of, and that's just an aspect. So that's a very small thing I deal with. But because of that, I've looked at a lot of different things, and I've tried a few of them, and nothing makes a difference. But I'm interested. I'm looking. Imagine if this woman had such a significant issue. Would she try almost anything that she could try? And I'll bet she did. It ruined her life. She would have always felt uncomfortable, always having to deal with things, and she must have tired of this kind of thing immediately. Who touched my garments? Other gospel accounts will use the word border. And you know that Jewish men were supposed to dress distinctively, and Jesus, as a righteous man, would have had similar traits. They were supposed to be wearing a garment that would have had tassels on each corner, two in the front, two in the back. It's almost like a poncho that you would wear under your clothes, and it might stick out from a coat or some robe or something that you had. And Jesus' tassels, that's the word for them, must have been visible, at least on occasion, as he was walking from underneath his garments. So we think of what the woman did. Most of the pictures we have, this is the common perspective, as she's down on her knees touching the hem of his clothes. It seems, if we use the other gospel accounts, it very likely she's talking about his his little tassels. And they would have been this nice, almost robin's egg blue kind of color. So they would have stood out against lighter colored clothing. So she just wanted Jesus to go by. And as he did, if she just touched one of those four corners, just touched one, she thought that's all it needed. Now, we're going to assume a couple of things, but I'm going to explain why. This comment, "Who touched my garments," does not mean that Jesus was the equivalent of radioactive or possessing some kind of electrical static power. Some people have attempted to explain, Jesus, anything that touched him would exude power. So people were always brushing up against him, taking reward, delivery, answer for their problems without involving Jesus at all. The Bible does not present Jesus as a marionette. The Bible does not present Jesus as radiating energy and power that was not under his control. It wasn't that people would brush up, run up against him, stroke his clothes because something would happen. I believe that Jesus' healing power did not work independently like a battery shorted out. Like, oh, what's wrong with that? Oh, it's got a short circuit. Oh, I wish I would have known that. I don't think Jesus' power worked that way. Especially when something happened inappropriately. Jesus, the Son of God, limited in a great majority of cases his ability to exercise his position as God. Philippians talks about that. But he did exercise some things, and particularly you'll see in the Gospels where Jesus knew what people were thinking. More than one occasion, especially with the Pharisees, he knew what they were thinking. Here, I'm sure as this woman approached Jesus and Jesus had whatever exercise of his divine power that he and the Father thought was appropriate, that he was aware of this woman's presence. He was aware what was on her heart. And because she came up and very likely behind him, it seems in the crowd, Jesus is walking. This woman would have approached him from behind and touched his clothing out of an act of faith. Jesus understood this, knew this, sensed her presence, and was actively willing to heal her and honor her faith. But it seems that she approached him from beside, out of his field of vision, or behind. So what's Jesus' question? I want to see you. I want to see you face to face. Jesus seems to have known what was going on. You don't have occasions where people just touched Jesus and left because they wanted to be healed. They were afraid he would say no. She believed that he could be healed. Because remember, what is Jesus doing? Jesus is with the synagogue's leaders group. They're going to his house to heal his daughter. Jesus is obviously interested in healing people today. Will he heal me? I know he can help me if he can help her. She was nervous. She was afraid. Perhaps had she broken some rule. Perhaps she had offended Jesus. Perhaps she wasn't supposed to do this. She came and, notice, fell down before him and told him the whole truth. Here she told an abbreviated story, I'm sure, of her terrible affliction that no one could help. This is what I've had. I've been dealing with it. I've spent all my money. I've invested hours and tried everything you can imagine. This can have an opportunity to help for today, but it was impossible for them. Today, people who have this kind of issues, you can go to the doctor. They can take care of this in most of those cases, but not then. And again, it had ruined her life. It had changed her life. We don't have any message of family about her, but I can't imagine that she had family that she lived with because of the influence that her disease had. Why is going on? It was common for people to believe that you were very sick. It was because of your fault. Jesus, who had sinned, this man or his father, that he was born blind. So there was a lot of concern and question, and then uncleanness if you came into her presence. So everything was changed about her life. What happened? Jesus was willing to be interrupted. Just like Jairus came to interrupt his day, this woman interrupted Jesus' day. But he knew her story. He wanted to hear it from her, and he honored her faith. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. This is the only time Jesus called an adult woman by this term, daughter. We're going to see it coming up later for this girl who was a child. But this is the only time Jesus used this title with an adult woman. This comforted her as he acknowledged her and their new spiritual and emotional relationship of compassion and care. Imagine the loneliness this woman experienced on a daily basis. Imagine the things she would like to have done, but she could not connect. And then imagine the things that she might have had to do to just take care of herself on a regular basis. She was in a bad place. But Jesus allowed her to receive healing from him. He connected with her. He encouraged her. He comforted her. He told her, this is a little bit interesting, it was her faith that had healed her. And go in peace is a little different kind of phraseology. What it really says is not leave me in a peaceful situation, but Jesus is saying go into peace, or your life has been filled with concern, worry, agitation, anxiety. After our meeting today, please enter into peace. You can go home and relax. You can go. I think they had to wait a week after their uncleanness was over and make some kind of sacrifice. But she could now be at rest. Her body was healed. The religious implications. She could enter the temple. She could go to her friend's house. Her friends could come to her. The disconnect physically, emotionally, and spiritually was gone. And Jesus is saying, take advantage of this. Enter into peace and rest. When God touches us, sometimes our contact with God can have these kinds of results in body, in soul, and being able to connect with other people in a way that was difficult before because of the different circumstances of your life. Now notice, while he was still speaking, simultaneously to Jesus talking to this woman and telling her this, there was another commotion in the crowd because someone from Jairus' house had fought through the crowd, come to the front, come and seen where Jesus and Jairus was, and had a message. And the message was perhaps the worst words Jairus could hear. His beloved daughter had died. Death of a loved one is perhaps the greatest loss we can ever experience. I can remember, I've told you before, I've been adopted by my grandparents. I remember when my birth mother died. She died of cancer, result from that. And my mom, grandma, for a year, she grieved. And she didn't talk to me about a lot of stuff, but at that point, she started telling me a lot of things. And she made that comment you've heard other people say, that no parent should have to see the death of their own child. And that really affected her. My mom was 32, I think, when she died. And it just devastated. And I watched part of her hair go gray in that 1 year. After a year, she was able to get released from her grief. But that's not uncommon. If you remember, if you've been here to church for enough years, you'll remember Gil Bendorf. And when his wife Helen died, that happened to him. It just paralyzed him. He was never the same. So death of a close one can be a tremendous life-changing loss, because death can be the great crush in life. What can we do about it? Not much. The Bible says we're going to die. The wages of sin is death. But what can we do about it ourselves? They were trying, I think, the way the phraseology was, to be as kind, as respectful as they could when he told them. Some of the discussion was, you know, Jairus, your daughter's dead. You are asking this man to come. Don't bother. Don't trouble anymore. Don't have him come over. Don't go through the issues. I'm sure his wife was very discouraged. There needed to be a lot of, you know, discussion, healing, and maybe it's not a time to bring a guest. Jesus talked to Jairus, because he was a man of faith to begin with. He said, I know you can heal my daughter. The people who brought the message were not people of faith, because they perceived that once death had come, there was nothing else Jesus could do. Mary and Martha made the same reaction when he came and Lazarus had died. They said, oh Lord, it's been 3 days. His body is decomposing. You don't want to go in there. So they had the same kind of reaction. Overhearing here may have the sense also that Jesus was intentionally ignoring the words that the men had spoken loud enough for both he and Jairus to hear. The words went out, but they were not affecting Jesus, what he had planned to do, and he wanted Jairus to not be affected by them either. Why take this man home? So his words to Jairus demonstrate that Jesus wanted him to think beyond what he had heard. This would have been incredible for Jairus to hear. Do not be afraid any longer, only believe. Do you think this man had doctors there? Yes. Do you think he had people with medicines? Yes. Would they know that she had died? Yes. Surely these people didn't mean to deceive him. He deserved to know the truth, however. Both these words were commands that Jesus gave to Jairus, imperatives. Don't be afraid. Only believe. They're commands for Jairus to overcome his emotions, to overcome his feelings, his hopelessness, because you're trusting in me. You're not trusting in the doctor. He needed to change his emotions, his mind, and get in control of himself. So when Jesus arrived, his life-giving power went on demonstration here as it did in other places in the Gospels, and it's for us to hear that Jesus calls us to see death as a temporary state. You'll see in the New Testament, Paul and other writers picking up on this phrase of sleep. When a believer dies, what are they? They are essentially asleep. Their body is not moving until resurrection. We're looking forward to resurrection time when the soul is reconnected with the body. This is what the New Testament seems to teach. Those who were there, they saw Jesus come in. He saw the child. He says, oh, don't worry. She's not dead, but she's only sleeping. Which again, since Jesus has power over the body and the soul both, she's just calmly there and is about to be awoken. So sleep would have been appropriate for him to make. Those who heard this mocked Jesus, mocked what he said, criticized him. The girl is clearly dead. Jesus took control of the room now, and he cleared it of everyone. Not like he cleared the temple, but I'm sure he made sure everyone understood that it's time for you to go now, except for mom, dad, Jesus, and the girl. He was just there with the parents and her. No one needed to be around. They didn't need to listen to the negative things they were saying. Why? Jesus is most concerned with compassion, with trying to, as with the woman, go enter into a time of peace now. We've fixed your situation. Go find the benefit. Go find the rest. Go enter into a quiet, relaxing time. Jesus is most characterized by compassion. The emotion most ascribed to him is that he was moved with compassion. This is what was needed now. Talitha kum was Aramaic. Aramaic was a local language that was very similar to Hebrew. It was written in the same ways, similar terms. It was just a little bit different. Going to Eastern Europe, I have met people who are Russian and people who are Ukrainian. And it all looks the same to me, but they're different languages. And I can't tell them apart. I'm not smart enough. Aramaic is very similar to Hebrew. I've got some Aramaic study books, but I don't really need them. It's so similar to Hebrew. The word kum is the word for rise in the Hebrew language. Talitha, as you can see, is a word for a young child or for a lamb. And so saying to this lady, this young girl, Talitha kum, the idea is get up. But what did he did? Remember the father? The father spoke about his daughter in kind words. Jesus, knowing this man's heart, used similar phraseology when he caused her to become alive again, calling her little lamb. It's time to get up. Talitha kum. And she rose. She got up. I agree with people who say Jesus probably told them to go ahead and don't interact with very many people right now, because mocking had been the moment's reaction. And when people saw this little girl walking, doing things, sitting down and having whatever they had for a snack or a meal for her, maybe they started off with broth too. If you're sick so often, the doctor tells you to just have some broth. She needed some time to recover. Jesus had risen her from the dead, but very possibly she needed to get her strength back because, again, she's a young child. No one should know about this, because she would have been very easily been a individual of scorn, or she faked it, or there would have been some misunderstanding, some harsh words, and she just needed to be left alone for a while so that she could be back 100% and let the initial wave of emotion of the crowd go away. If you've been watching news events, you will see that just in the last week, there were hundreds of thousands of people in Iran marching, supporting the funeral of this person who had been killed by American forces. And now there's a plane crash. And again, many thousands of people are protesting against the leaders that they were just praising a few days ago. So the crowd, the mob is fickle, whatever strikes them. Jesus didn't want to subject this girl to a fickle crowd. It was time for her to rest, recover, and get back to normal. For us, these miracles are designed in our Gospels to show Jesus' supernatural power and loving care for people. These had nowhere to turn. The two people in these stories, they had no help. They had nothing going on for them. He had genuine care for suffering, for people in difficulty. He came in kindness to those who turned to him, responding to him in faith. And he responded to people who trusted him more than he responded to other people. I used to play a lot of sports. And you know, there's always the issue, especially when you have emotional, strong, powerful, young, adult men. Don't touch me. Someone might come up, slap him on the back. Don't do that. And he might get angry and say or do something. Someone might try to tease them, or when I was a kid in high school, guys would go up and punch each other on the shoulder. Kind of a fun thing, but also maybe I'll knock my friend over. Teachers didn't like us doing that, so we had to quit. But most of these young, aggressive, powerful men, they want their space. Don't get in my space. But yet, if you'll watch, and I'm thinking the NBA, because
intense physical power, fast, emotions are raging, people will get in fights. I think athletes get in fights more, I think, at basketball games when they play than any other sport, more even than hockey. But you see these young men doing something big happens. They jump, they chest bump, high fives, or go through the whatever process that's kind of cool for them. But you see a lot of touching, physical interaction after something really good has happened. Why? It's a way of self-expression. You're interacting with someone else. It's a way to reach out and bridge the gap, to share your joy, to share your happiness at your friend's joy. When we see Jesus in the Gospels, sometimes in his healings, sometimes in his speakings, you will see physical touch. Jairus' daughter was able to be healed by Jesus' activities. The woman came up, she wanted Jesus' help. What did she do? She touched him. Sometimes, one of the best things we can do for our friends is not just give them kind words, because we should be giving kind words, but it's also to give them some touch, appropriately. Like in church, we have our little greeting time, and I will tell you, years ago, I started seeing this in other churches, so I thought, whenever I become a pastor, we're going to do that, and this is why, is because people come in, they sit down, and you're in your spot. I could mark an X, that's where you're going to be next Sunday as well. You're in your spot. But if you get up and shake hands, like just now, Russ Norman had a little grin. If I see you shaking hands, people are going to smile. They're going to warm up. And when you sit back down after that few moments of greeting, you're much more relaxed. Your emotional face changes. I'll see people smile, or maybe they'll tell a joke, or they'll say something to each other. Touching each other and sharing makes a difference. It calms you and makes you feel closer to someone. When Jesus healed, not always, but he often touched, or people reached out to him. It's important for us to connect, not just on a mental, philosophical, faith, spiritual ground, but also on a personal ground. Talking, saying hi, shaking hands, a little bit of pat on the back, if it's appropriate, maybe you tickle somebody. My family knows I'll jump if they do something like that to me, because I'm really sensitive to that. So now you know something else about me. But a little bit of physical touch that's appropriate. Handshake, slap on the back, arm around for a minute, a little hug, really can brighten your day. So as we connect with God and have fellowship with him and with each other, we connect with God, the God we can never see or touch, with our heart, our mind, our soul, and our neighbors. As we connect with our neighbors, it's good to remember to try to help them go into peace, as Jesus said to this woman. And part of that's going to involve connection, so that you feel connected and at one with each other.